from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, abortion advocates are calling him an aberration. But the ghoulish discovery of over 2,000 aborted babies at the home of now-deceased abortionist Ulrich Clofer is in keeping with other exposed abortionists like Kermit Gosnell and Douglas Carpent. The latest discovery in South Bend, Indiana, has both state and federal officials calling for more investigations into the clinics connected to Clofer and for more oversight of the abortion industry. Indiana Congresswoman Jackie Walorski is here with more in just a moment. Even as more storms develop in the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, the massive relief effort to Hurricane Dorian that hit the Bahamas continues. Bloomberg is reporting that the hurricane could have a price tag of over $7 billion. Now, Samaritan's Purse has been on the ground establishing the infrastructure of what is going to be a long, long recovery. Franklin Graham, president of Samaritan's Purse, just returned from the Bahamas, and he joins me later with an update. And are core medical skills being jeopardized in our medical schools because of an increased focus on politically correct social justice issues like global warming, guns, and proper pronouns? The new president of the Christian Medical Association, Dr. Mike Choup, responds to an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal by a former associate dean at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine who says that is exactly what is happening. And it's that time of year again, Friday night football and threats from atheists over prayer. Well, the students at one Alabama high school, inspired by their youth pastor, are refusing to surrender their constitutional rights. The youth pastor of Trinity United Methodist Church in Opelika, Alabama, Pastor Steve Bass, is here to tell us the story. Also, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, will join me a little bit later as we discuss practical steps on how students, parents, and pastors can successfully counter those who are trying to rob Americans of their freedom of religion. All of that and more on this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you are on Twitter, while I'm still there, you can be in touch with me, at T. Perkins. All right, let me just remind you, at the website, you can also find out more about the upcoming Values Voter Summit, which is October the 11th through the 13th here in Washington, D.C. A whole list of speakers. You can find them all at TonyPerkins.com, but some of our favorites, Dr. Bill Bennett, Gary Bauer will be a part of it. We'll have a number of state leaders, and especially exciting to me is a lot of young people that are standing up for their faith. And, of course, the president's been invited, vice president. And then on Saturday night at our gala, we will be honoring Andrew Brunson and his wife. They will be here 1 year to the date from which he was released from prison in Turkey. So we'll be giving him our Cost of Discipleship Award. You can find out how you can be a part of that and join speakers like Dana Lash, Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North, and so many more. Find it all at TonyPerkins.com. All right, there are new calls for an investigation into the abortionist Ulrich Clofer. And he was operating abortion clinics in Indiana, South Bend, Indiana. And they found in his home more than 2,000 remains, bodies of aborted babies. Clofer died earlier this month, and family found the remains just a couple of days ago while cleaning out his house. He had multiple clinics, as I mentioned, in Indiana, running one in Fort Wayne, another in Gary, and then one in South Bend. Congresswoman Jackie Walorski, who represents the 2nd District of Indiana, has expressed her outrage and is considering introducing federal legislation that would ensure the remains of aborted babies are treated with dignity. She serves on the Ethics Committee as well as the Ways and Means Committee, and she joins us now. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony. Thanks so much for talking about this today, too. I can tell you that this happened last weekend, and the discovery of those bodies, of those babies in formaldehyde in bottles in this guy's house is sickening beyond words. This guy, Clofer, was notorious in northern Indiana, Illinois, multiple states. but he was very, very active in Indiana and in South Bend. In South Bend alone, this guy is responsible for hundreds of thousands, hundreds and into the thousands of abortions statewide, something like 30,000 over the years that he practiced in Indiana.
Now, there are some that are saying, well, you know, this is just one guy. He's just an aberration. But we're beginning to see a pattern here. Kermit Gosnell. Saw him in Philadelphia. And the callousness. I can't imagine someone transporting, you know, almost 100 miles, his home from where one of his clinics were at, to transport baby bodies that he had aborted and then store them in his house.
That's right. You know, Tony, that's why I immediately called for a federal investigation over the weekend. And I'm glad the Indiana and Illinois Attorney Generals are working together, but I am very, very grateful that the White House has joined my call for a federal investigation. We have to find out what happened here. What in the world was this guy doing with these babies? How in the world? Why was he taking them across state lines? Where did they come from, right? What is he doing with them? You know, just a couple of years ago, we had, you know, massive investigations about body parts being sold and those kinds of things. And here we are today. You know, just 2 weeks ago, Tony, we did a hearing in the halls of Congress here, a Born Alive protection bill, because Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, will not allow us to bring the bill down to give medical care to babies who live through abortions. And now here we are 2 weeks later having a conversation about protecting the babies that were killed in abortions because of what is happening with their bodies with guys like this that has access to them. What in the world is he doing with these bottles in his house?
I mean, this this speaks volumes about the coarsening of American society and how we treat, you know, children, the most vulnerable among us, these babies. You know, it's one thing to abort them. You know, we're as you pointed out, debating infanticide, which is what the New York governor has called for and what you and others are trying to prevent. And then we're talking about abortionists who are treating these babies and their bodies as if it's just some kind of, you know, specimen of frog or something that they want to carry home and put on a shelf and look at.
Yeah, it is. It's so sick. And it's a tragic case. But I think that's why when people look at us, especially as lawmakers, and they say, oh, you're just pro-life, you're just trying to be, you know, unfair to these doctors, to this practice, to this abortion industry. But I think this just goes right back to the case in point, why abortion providers have to be held to strict guidelines and incredible oversight. Because now we're going to have a conversation, because I'm going to work on legislation to bring down that's going to hold all of them accountable for what they do with the bodies of the babies that are aborted. We're going to have to do something like what Indiana did in some kind of a reporting clause.
Right. Yeah, Jackie, the bigger issue here, and I appreciate you doing that, because I think, you know, we've got to address the issues that we can and try to build consensus across the aisle politically. And unfortunately, you know, the other side is willing to give so little that even something as outrageous as this, what you're talking about, will be difficult to accomplish, even though it's just basic human dignity that we're talking about. But I go back to my days in office in the state of Louisiana and introducing one of the nation's first clinic regulation acts. Because of the deplorable conditions in these clinics and the risk that the women were put at. So, I mean, this guy not only has issues with storing baby bodies in his that he aborted in his home, but his clinic conditions were deplorable as well. And that was one of the reasons the state was constantly after him.
Yeah, in my time in the state too, Tony, I mean, we tried everything. We tried to get his credentials. We tried to get his licensing. We tried to get many privileges taken away at hospitals. We did everything as a collective right to life community, and it took years to be able to actually get him from operating in the state of Indiana. So, you know, literally he died, you know, earlier this month. And at the same time, South Bend has been such a battleground for abortion providers. So we just got him shut down, and here comes that abortion facility from Texas, marches right into South Bend, sets up shop, is operating illegally right now, today, right there in South Bend. And, you know, the fight goes on. It's a crazy thing that, you know, sooner seem like, you know, you're gaining victory over here. But here we are now talking about after the babies died, that you've got somebody as sick as this guy. And now we have to step in again and look for yet another regulation and oversight on this abortion industry. I just think it's catastrophic.
I'm almost out of words to, it just seems like each one of these incidents is becoming more grotesque and deplorable and as the curtain is pulled back on the abortion industry. Now, certainly not every abortionist is doing what Clofer did, but it's the nature of death. It's the nature of the industry there. And you have politicians providing cover. I mean, we talk about this is in South Bend, Indiana. You were just talking about that. They have a very prominent mayor there who happens to be running for president, Mayor Pete. What has he done to rein in the abortion industry?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'll tell you, the main reason I called for this investigation is so we can literally have an unbelievable, thorough look at every place this guy operated, at everything that he did, trying to identify those baby parts and trying to identify, you know, folks, Indiana Right to Life out of the state of Indiana raised that question yesterday. You know, whose remains are in these jars? Where do they come from? Maybe they didn't even come from the Midwest. Maybe he had something else going on that he was moving these around. Why in the world? But I know this, we got to get to the bottom of it, because if we think this is bad, you know what? They'll find something even worse. And if we let this go by, this atrocity that people were gasping at this weekend, if we let this go by, we're hurting ourselves in the long run. We've got to hold these doctors accountable, hold the practices, the places they practice accountable. And so I jumped. I literally couldn't believe. I called for that investigation as soon as I could, and I'm grateful that the White House joined us.
So, Congresswoman Velarski, are you going to be moving forward, introducing this legislation on the treatment of fetal remains?
We will. We're going to look at a lot of different options. That's one option that's out there that we're certainly looking at. And actually, you know, that little component there passed the U.S. Supreme Court test about 6 weeks ago. So we know that has a safety net already in it because of the Supreme Court passage. But there's a lot of things, a lot of ways we can handle this. I think the investigation will actually lend great wisdom to us as we go forward. But we're definitely moving legislation. We're definitely sending a letter asking for a formal investigation. And we're definitely going to push this with every kind of power that we have, because it's sick. It should never be repeated. And we have an opportunity to stop it, and we should do that.
Yes, absolutely. And let us know how we can help in that effort, because I think now is the time to move this forward as once again the abortion industry has been exposed for what it is. Congresswoman Jackie Velarski, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. Congresswoman Jackie Velarski from Indiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, if you live in her district or in Indiana, be sure and send her a note to thank her for standing up on such a difficult issue, but something that needs to be driven home. We've got to stop this. Got to expose this industry for what it really is. All right, coming up next, Franklin Graham joins us, just returning from the Bahamas, with an update on the relief efforts to the hurricane. Don't go away. More to come right after this.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Hurricane Dorian, which pummeled the Bahamas, could cost the country upwards of $7 billion in insured and uninsured losses, according to an estimate from risk modeler Karen Clark and Company. At least 50 people have died, 70,000 are homeless, and hundreds of people are still missing. Dorian was one of the most severe Atlantic storms on record and perhaps the strongest hurricane to ever hit the Bahamas. Franklin Graham just returned from the Bahamas. He was there yesterday to oversee the substantial outreach of Samaritan's Purse. They're ministering in the name of Jesus, meeting the needs, immediate needs, and I'm sure they'll be there for a long time to come as the those various islands rebuild. Joining me now is our good friend Franklin Graham. Franklin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
I know you just returned, and I know you've seen a lot of storms, you've seen a lot of devastation, but describe for us what you saw yesterday as you flew over the islands that were hit by this hurricane.
Tony, it's like any time there's a storm of this size, it just leaves almost total devastation in its wake. Where we worked right at Freeport, I spent most of my time yesterday, is this island, most of it went underwater. And like the airport was 11 feet underwater. And so this is salt water. And so when the water went back down, all your electrical and your buildings and all that stuff is just destroyed. And we put a hospital in. We were asked by the Ministry of Health to put a hospital right next to their existing hospital, which they had to close because of the water damage. And we've got a 40-bed unit. We've already treated over 700 patients. We've done 11 major surgeries since we've been there. And these numbers just grow every day as more and more people are coming in. But we have about 105 people on the ground working associated, mostly with the hospital at this time. We're in the process also, Tony, distributing tarps, helping people get their damage on their roofs or if the building wasn't completely destroyed, trying to save what's left. So we're doing that. Hygiene kits, things like blankets. One thing we found out down there, everybody's mattresses in their houses got wet, so they're just destroyed. They're ruined. And they said if we just had air mattresses, we could stay in our own homes. We wouldn't have to go to a shelter. We wouldn't have to go to another island, but we could stay in our own homes, what's left of it, if we had an air mattress. So I'm trying to find air mattresses today for people. I never even thought of that, Tony. That's just a simple thing we can do. But, you know, what do you do when you're when all everything in your house goes underwater? Your furniture, everything. You just can't use it.
Well, and a lot of people have the wrong impression of the Bahamas because we see the vacation spots, the tourist spots, which really they do drive the economy. That does drive the economy down there. But many of these islands are impoverished. I mean, these people don't have much to begin with.
No, you're right, Tony. These are God-fearing people. I mean, it's so many people. The police, military people came up, said, "God bless you. Thank you for coming." They love God. So many Christians, and they are poor. They don't have much, and they're just grateful for what little bit of help that we can give them. And Tony, we're going to be down there for I don't know how long, but it's going to be a long time, and it's just going to take a long time for these people to be able to recover. And you're right, these houses, of course, they have the big hotels that tourists go to, but the people themselves live a very I'm not saying these are necessarily poor, as like you'd see in Africa, maybe some other places, but they are people that are have very little means. And this storm, just what little they had, it took it.
So, Franklin, at this point, what can people do, Christians in this country, who know we have a responsibility to help and partner with groups like Samaritan's Purse that do excellent work? How can they help you at this point?
Well, first of all, we do need always financial help because we have a DC-8 cargo plane that we've already made 9 trips. We've carried 220 tons of materials in. There'll be more that we'll have to take in. And all this has to, I mean, this just takes, you know, money to do these things, to buy the tarps, the mattresses, the blankets, just the consumables in the hospital that you're using every day. All that has to be replaced, and you have to replace it every couple of days. So financial help is always needed, but people's prayers. We also are looking for volunteers in the months to come to go to our website to see how you might be able to come spend a week with us and help with some of the work that we'll be doing, the physical work. So I think the main thing and always number one is prayer, that God just gives us wisdom and he guides us and directs us as to the people that he wants us to help.
Let me ask you about that, Franklin. You mentioned there's a lot of Christians there, but as you minister, because I know how you operate, because I've worked alongside Samaritan's Purse and cannot say enough good things about the work they do in the relief and the restoration, but also meeting the spiritual needs. I know Billy Graham Ministries is also a part of this, but what has been the spiritual component of this? Have you been able to minister to people spiritually?
We have chaplains for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association that are connected to the hospital right now. So every person that they come in, when they're in the waiting area, we have chaplains there to pray with them and to just talk to them, to hear their story. And then that brings in other family members that we pray with. We've led a number of people to Christ. Every person that comes to the hospital is prayed for, and that's just part of it. And as we begin to work in helping some of these communities rebuild, we'll have chaplains with all of our rebuild sites.
Well, I, again, can't say enough about the excellent work that Samaritan's Purse does, as you've done stuff domestically, internationally. And so I would encourage folks to join with Samaritan's Purse financially with your prayers and as the opportunity comes to volunteer. And I do want to – there was a CNN story yesterday, headline said, "Not everyone wants thoughts and prayers after a disaster." According to a study of hurricane survivors. That's not been my experience, Franklin. I think people want both our prayers and our care, both, and we need to do both.
They do. That's absolutely, we do it.
Franklin, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me, and we're going to continue to encourage folks to join with you in supporting the efforts there in the Bahamas and elsewhere.
Thank you, Tony. God bless.
All right, we'll see you soon. Franklin Graham with Samaritan's Purse. By the way, they're going to be our Faith in Action partner at this year's Values Voter Summit. But go to their website, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and see how you can help. All right, political correctness in our medical schools. Are we dumbing down our doctors and nurses to advance political correctness? We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, the American College of Physicians says its mission is to promote the, quote, quality and effectiveness of health care. But increasingly, their focus is on gun control, climate change, and the transgender ideology. Now, a lot of this agenda is being pushed in medical schools across America. And the question is that affecting the training, the skill sets that medical professionals are acquiring in our universities? Joining me now with his analysis is Dr. Mike Chupp. He is the brand new CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Prior to his role as executive vice president for the organization, Dr. Chupp served for 20 years as a career missionary with World Gospel Missions in Kenya, Africa, where he wore several different leadership hats, including the medical. Dr. Chupp, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, the former associate dean of curriculum at the University of Pennsylvania's School of Medicine last week in an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, Dr. Stanley Garbfold, said that, it was entitled Take Two Aspirin and Call Me By My Pronouns, in which he asserted that medical schools and the curriculum that's being pushed in these medical schools is increasingly focused on social justice rather than equipping medical professionals to treat medical issues. Is that true?
Well, I would say that it is true. We've actually had some medical students from across the country who have come across our Freedom to Care website, freedomtocare.org, that our Vice President for Government Relations, Jonathan Embody, set up several years ago during the Obama administration. And so a number of med students have written in and saying, I feel like I'm an incredible minority in my medical school. And one from New Mexico in particular just said, I'm sitting through these classes and it clearly violates my Christian worldview and biblical beliefs, but we're not allowed to speak up. I'm ostracized if I ask even basic questions about transgender ideology, a number of things related to LGBT issues. And when we provided some of our materials to this particular medical student, she said, "I'm so relieved to know that there are others in this country." And so there's quite a bit of politically correct ideology being pushed in medical schools these days, Tony.
Well, we saw this in the military under the previous administration, where they were pushing all of these radical social experimentations. And now we've seen the effect of that. It came at the cost of military readiness and effectiveness. Is there a concern that the same thing is happening on our medical schools, that as they push, you know, these issues about climate change, which I'm not quite sure what that has to do at all with healthcare, then gun control and the transgender ideology, is that at the risk of losing the essential skills that our medical professionals need?
Well, Tony, I will say that it's incumbent upon medical school faculty, those who are preparing the next generation of healthcare professionals, to make medical students aware of burden of disease. With the warmer temperatures, warmer climates, certain diseases are more prevalent. Even Lyme disease, for example, a tick-borne disease, is more prevalent. And so making medical students aware of diseases and diagnoses that are more common and putting that on their radar. So there are it is appropriate to talk about some of these issues, including climate. But in terms of taking up medical students' time, medical students are busier than ever. And frankly, at the end of the second year of medical school, every medical student across the United States takes an exam called the United States Medical License Exam, Part 1. And I have been around medical students, have tried to get them to come to Bible studies and to get gather for CMDA functions. And they actually have mentors, faculty in some of these schools where the deans want them to perform well. Why do they want them to perform well? Because they want them to all match in their residencies and be able to proclaim, especially some of the newer medical schools, that they have a high matching rate. And so I think what's going to work against the whole idea of a different kind of medical student being trained is the fact that medical students and their faculty want to get into residency, and they have to do well on the what's called the USMLE Part 1. And to do that, they've got to be very focused on basic discipline. So I think in the article you're referring to, it's admitted that these trends are not really infiltrating a broad spectrum of medical schools. Faculty are resisting it because they've been given a mandate to train a great medical student who's going to do well on this exam. The problem will be, Tony, is that if those who are in control of the exam begin to do what they did with the MCAT, the Medical College Admission Test, about 4 years ago, in which they began to put questions on some of the issues of social justice, to be able to screen out for a different kind of medical student to get into medical school.
Well, and I'm sure that, as you pointed out earlier, with Christian students feeling, you know, marginalized, silenced, that this could have an effect upon whether or not Christians go into the field of medicine, which is a whole other topic. Dr. Chupp, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and this is something that we'll want to discuss further because of its implications. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for the kind invitation, Tony.
All right, Dr. Mike Chupp. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christian's call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. That was students at Opelika High School in Opelika, Alabama, last Friday night at the football game. Now, it's that time of year, Friday night football, and atheists threatening schools over prayer. Well, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Wisconsin, this is what they do, they harass people. They sent a letter to Opelika on behalf of, supposedly, a parent of an Opelika High School student who was offended by student-led prayer over the loudspeaker at football games. Their child, according to the complaint, felt alienated, and the parent wanted to move out of the school district because of this. No further commentary there from me. But as a result, the atheist group wanted to stop prayer at the football game. Isn't that amazing how, you know, one person's offended, so everybody else has to surrender their rights? But they didn't realize that a youth pastor and his students would not so easily surrender and capitulate their constitutional rights. So the school, instead of having a student-led prayer, had a moment of silence. Well, the kids took full advantage of that moment of silence and, as you heard just a few moments ago, led the 5,000-plus people in the Lord's Prayer. Joining me now is youth pastor Steve Bass from Trinity United Methodist Church in Opelika. He has served Opelika for 22 years. Pastor Bass, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Well, give us the story. Give us the backstory here. I'm very interested to see how this came about.
So, I mean, I've been in this community, like you said, for 20-something years, and this tradition goes back 100 years. We started playing football in Opelika in 1917, and I spoke to many of the older residents that went to school here, and they said the tradition was going on when they were in high school, that a student would always lead the prayer. It wasn't a teacher, it wasn't a coach or an administration official. It was always a student who would lead a prayer, and the prayer was pretty similar each time. It was, you know, let's have a good time tonight, help the players be free from injury, help our fans be good sports and good hosts to each other. And it was always pretty generic in that way. There was no, you know, all you dirty sinners are going to burn if you don't come to Jesus.
Right.
And they, you know, it's gone on for a long time. That was something I was very proud of, that I was, because I'm from Central Florida, very different culture. And when I came here to see that people were still doing this, and I would say, you know, the Christian faith is woven into so much of our culture in Opelika. We pray before city council meetings. We pray at the lighting of the Christmas tree ceremony in downtown. It's just all over what we do, so it was never thought of until last week. Beginning of the week, maybe Monday or Tuesday, we received the letter, or we were made known. I don't know when the letter was received, but it was put on one of the local news stations, put it on Facebook, that Opelika would now be doing a moment of silence before the national anthem instead of the traditional led prayer from one of the students. And, you know, it was weird. It just got impressed it upon me. And many people have asked, many people have questioned me on this. And I just said, you know, I just felt God speak into my heart that this is not okay, that you need to take a stand. And yeah, many people that in our culture, in our society, talk about how God has been removed from schools and everything else. And it didn't happen overnight. It was a series of concessions like this, where we have tried to be graceful as Christians and make concessions and make decisions to benefit the other side. And before we know it, this is where we are. And so I just didn't feel right. I immediately shared the article on Facebook and just called my students into play. And I said, guys, you don't have to stand for this. They can threaten the coaches' jobs. They can threaten the teachers' jobs. They can threaten the administration. They cannot restrict your rights as students. And so I encourage them to use the Lord's Prayer and to share it with the other students in the student section and in the school, and to not do it in a disrespectful, in-your-face manner, to be reverent and respectful, but to stand up for what they believe in. This is what we preach all the time, is there's going to become a moment where you either have to stand for your faith or you cave in. And it's like in Revelations where Jesus said, I wish you were hot or cold, but don't try to ride the fence. Don't try to sit in the middle. And our students rose up tremendously. The student section is probably about 500 or so students. Stadium seats about 8,000, probably about 6,000 or 7,000 people there for this game. And the students, the parents, the fans, the opposing team found out and joined in as well. It's really awesome.
Well, well done. And I think the instruction is spot on. It should be done respectfully, but we cannot surrender. Because I think this is actually where it has come to. I think it's very, very appropriate that we're relegated to a moment of silence, which should be prayer. And I think that really symbolizes where, as you said, this systematic surrender of these fundamental rights has left us silent. And it's time to speak up.
Yeah, we've retreated for a long time, and we haven't gone on the offensive because of our culture and society will call us out now, and we're so worried about offending, as you said, you know, one person or a group of people. And, you know, our students were upset, and they really answered the challenge that I put forth and, you know, got their classmates in on it. Some of our students were waiting at the visitor team entrance and telling them what was going on. I remember that the cheerleaders, one of our youth parents, saw the cheerleaders at Chick-fil-A before the game and told them, hey, we'll let you know what's going on here tonight. Spread the word among your crowd. And so it was well done. And like, I had several people call me and say, you know, should we push this? You know, is this the right thing to do? And I said, you know, I can only speak for myself and what I feel like God has impressed upon my heart, and that is to stand in this moment
And I challenged our students at our worship service on Wednesday night prior to the game. I said, this is one of those pinnacle moments in our history that you get the chance to be a part of. And, you know, even the kids that do not go to this Opelika High School, they go to other schools in the area that are part of our youth ministry. I'm like, take a break, come to our school this week. And many of them did. They came over to our football game just to be a part of this.
So, Steve, let me ask you a final question. Do you think this, because of the students standing up and speaking out, would this cause the administration there to kind of rethink their quick compromise to the Freedom From Religion Foundation?
You know, I hope so. I hope that we'll go back to the drawing board and ask. Many people were asking us today what would be the ramifications if we continued on with what we've been doing. And I was contacted yesterday by someone from the Alliance for Defending Freedoms that wants to provide us legal counsel. And so I hope the Opelika City School System will listen to their counsel and see what they would like to do moving forward. I know maybe last season or two seasons ago at Arkansas State University, the Freedom From Religion group tried to step in there over a situation with a sticker on a helmet that was meant to honor a teammate who had passed away. And the students there didn't, the administration caved, and the students said, no, we're doing this. We're going to continue to do this. I think the sticker had a cross on it with the player's initials or number. And they, you know, they challenged them. And I just want to, you know, you're never know whether or not you're going to win the fight if you don't put up a fight.
And that's absolutely
so
right.
I encourage our administration to at least put our hat in the ring and see what happens. And, you know, if it's not, I know this, a movement started Friday night in our football stadium that was probably more powerful than the one student praying over the loudspeaker, because you had an entire football stadium of 6,000 or 7,000 people reciting the Lord's Prayer together and having a moment of church before football, which, football in Alabama can be church sometimes, but it was a huge movement, and I'm super proud of our community and our students for the stand that they took this week. And I pray that regardless of what happens, that this will become the new tradition, that we will not just have our 15 seconds of fame, but we'll continue to push and we'll continue to pray together every week. Regardless of what happens, so that this can become the new tradition, if nothing else.
Well, Pastor Steve Bass, thank you for being the inspiration and standing up and leading the way, providing that leadership. And that would be my prayer as well, that this not be a one-time thing, but even be, as you described, a movement. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be tracking this very closely. I hope to talk to you again soon in the near future.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you talking about it today.
All right. Pastor Steve Bass, youth pastor, Trinity United Methodist Church in Opelika, Alabama. That's what needs to happen. I'm telling you, we need to stand up and push back. Look, there's this radical agenda going into our schools. It's not just the Freedom From Religion Foundation. That is, by the way, targeting very red religious areas. That's what they're going after. They're no longer just kind of going on the fringes. They're going for the heart because they feel like if they can get the most Christian areas to go silent, the rest fall in place. And then you got the ACLU, you know, working this. And you got the Southern Poverty Law Center with their teaching tolerance. You got the Human Rights Campaign with all of their sexual education stuff, the perversion that they're putting into our schools. Parents, it's time to stand up. Pastors, time to stand up. You know, it's amazing to me. This is why I wrote the book, No Fear, Stories of Young People Who Are Standing Up for the Faith, because oftentimes the students are the ones left to stand. The teachers won't. The administrators won't. The pastors, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I'm thankful for guys like Steve. It's time to take a stand. Join me now, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. An attorney as well, focusing on religious freedom. You know, these are encouraging stories like this when we see a pastor inspiring his young people, affirming them in standing for their constitutional rights. By the way, today is the Constitution Day. appropriate to be talking about this. This is a freedom that we cannot give up.
It is, Tony. Very appropriate on this day. Obviously, the First Amendment protecting the free exercise of religion and protecting us against the government establishing a religion, which was meant to prevent people from being coerced into worshiping against their conscience. And often today, we're coerced in an opposite direction, coerced to worship at the altar of secularism, where we're forced to adhere to the official line that you can't talk about religion, you can't bring your faith in the public square. And that's a form of worship, a perverted, inverse form of worship itself. So very key to be talking about the Constitution today. Obviously, students in schools have First Amendment rights, just like we do outside of schools. Those rights look a little bit differently because you have questions of order and disruption of the classroom and the school environment. You have the question of whether the student is the one engaging in the religious expression versus the teacher, which there's a big caveat to this discussion itself. A lot of the reasons that we even make these delineations are because of decisions in which the courts and the Supreme Court have chipped away at the First Amendment over the years. Nonetheless, even now, students have rights under the First Amendment, and it's key to be hearing from these students standing up today as we celebrate the Constitution.
Yeah. I tell you, I'm just thinking so many things run through my mind. I wish we had another hour to talk about this because the courts are changing. We've got almost a third of the courts, soon to be about a third of the courts with Trump appointees, constitutionalists. Some of these bad decisions could be overturned. And a part of that, now the courts say they're not political, but they read the political winds. And when they see Americans saying, look, we're not going to put up with this, and pastors, parents, and children, students standing up, that has an influence.
It does. And, you know, when we look at the courts, we talk about originalists, folks who interpret the Constitution according to the words and the plain meaning at the time it was written. You know, we talk about the changing nature of the courts. Just several months ago, the court issued its decision in the American Legion case. This is a key Establishment Clause case that really sets us on the right road towards interpreting that provision in a way that opens up the public square to religious expression, protecting the exercise of folks like these folks all around the country.
No one can convince me that the founders had in their mind that Americans could not pray at a football game.
It's really just ridiculous. And even now, if we look at the guidance that First Liberty's put out for the rights of students, the students can pray even under the current situation. That tells you where freedom of religion is coming from when they send these letters.
Well, much more to talk about here, but unfortunately we're out of time. Folks, we have information available for you that can help you as your kids go back to school. I know everybody's pretty much back to school right now, but there's a lot of things happening in the classroom that you might not be aware of. Go to TonyPerkins.com and find out more and support us in this effort. We're trying to expose what the left is doing in the classroom. Go to TonyPerkins.com or text 4 schools. That's 4 schools. That's a number 4 schools to find out how you can be a part of helping expose what the left is doing in our classrooms. Travis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tony.
And thank you, folks, for being with us as well. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.